I'm going to open with a scripture, and especially after we've had our lighthouse song, Matthew 5, verse 13, and through to 20. And it's entitled in my Bible, Salt and Light. And it says, verse 13 of Matthew 5, "You are the salt of the earth. But if the salt loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? It is no longer good for anything, except to be thrown out and trampled underfoot. You are the light of the world. A town built on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on a stand, and it gives light to everyone in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others, that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven." And think about that bit, that glorify your Father in heaven. And the next bit says the fulfillment of the law from verse 17. "Do not think that I have come to abolish the law of the prophets. I have not come to abolish them, but to fulfill them. For truly I tell you, until heaven and earth disappear, not the smallest letter, not the least stroke of a pen will by any means disappear from the law until everything is accomplished. Therefore, anyone who sets aside one of the least of these commandments and teaches others accordingly will be called least in the kingdom of heaven. But whoever practices and teaches these commands will be called great in the kingdom of heaven. For I tell you that unless your righteousness surpasses that of the Pharisees and the teachers of the law, you will certainly not enter the kingdom of heaven." Now, last week, Randall mentioned the Random Acts of Kindness Day, which is celebrated on February the 17th. And I noticed in our bulletin, which you're not going to turn to now, but there's also a write-up on there. You can have a look at that during David's message after mine. But it's interesting there that while we have this random acts of kindness, we read in Matthew that while others may see your good deeds, there's the next bit, and glorify your Father in heaven. And it's fulfilling the law. Now, kindness is actually one of the fruits of the Spirit. And we read here in Galatians 5, 22, where we have the fruits of the Spirit listed. "But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, forbearance, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. Against such things there is no law." Now, kindness can seem perhaps one of the lesser things, where we think there's other things that are important, being a believer, that we need to do, that we should be doing, perhaps like prayer or Bible study or attending church. And as sometimes I joke, perhaps only half joke, when we're travelling to church and there's someone wanting to get out onto the busy road on the Saturday morning and I want to honk the horn and go, "Burp, burp, get out of the way, can't you see I'm going to church?" And we all have a bit of a laugh. And Kate sometimes chimes in and says, "Go on, ram him, ram him." And we have a bit of a laugh at it, but yet it can seem that way, can't it? That we're doing the right thing. Get out of the way, everybody. Don't try and cross the road in front of me. I'm in a hurry to get to church so I can be righteous. So is it really that lesser thing? Yet it's listed there as the fruit of the Spirit. Now, not only do we find it here today, but we can look in Isaiah 58, where the people in Judah were also struggling with this as well. Let's have a look in Isaiah 58, verses 1 through to 12. And here it's under the title True Fasting, where all the group are going through a fast. So part of being righteous, they're going to fast. Let's see. Isaiah 58, verse 1. Shout it out aloud. Do not hold back. Raise your voice like a trumpet. Declare to my people their rebellion and to the descendants of Jacob their sins. For day after day they seek me out. They seem eager to know my ways, as if they were a nation that does what is right and has not forsaken the commands of its God. They ask me for just decisions and seem eager for God to come near them. Why have we fasted, they say, and you have not seen it? Why have we humbled ourselves and you have not noticed? Yet on the day of your fasting you do as you please. You exploit your workers. Your fasting ends in quarrelling and strife. And in striking each other with wicked fists, you cannot fast as you do today and expect your voice to be heard on high. Is this the kind of fast I have chosen? Only a day for people to humble themselves? Is it only for bowing one's head like a reed or for lying in sackcloth and ashes? Is that what you call a fast, a day acceptable to the Lord? Is not this kind of fasting I have chosen to loose the chains of injustice, to untie the cords of the yoke, to set the oppressed free and break every yoke? Is it not to share your food with the hungry and to provide the poor wanderer with shelter? When you see the naked, to clothe them, and not to turn away from your own flesh and blood? So we see there that God's wanting them to practice the not so random acts of kindness. They are so focused on being right in their fasting that they're missing the point. Going on in verse 8, then your light will break forth like the dawn, and your healing will quickly appear. Then your righteousness will go before you, and the glory of the Lord will be your rear guard. Then you will call, and the Lord will answer, and you will cry for help, and he will say, here I am. If you do away with the yoke of oppression, with the pointing finger and malicious talk, and if you spend yourselves in behalf of the hungry and satisfy the needs of the oppressed, then your light will rise in the darkness, and your night will become like noonday. The Lord will guide you always. He will satisfy your needs in a sun-scorched land and will strengthen your frame. You will be like a well-watered garden, like a spring whose waters never fail. Your people will rebuild the ancient ruins and will raise up like the age-old foundations. You will be called repairer of broken walls, restorer of streets with dwellings. So, there we see it. The people of Judah were fasting. Yet, here they are fighting with one another. And the whole idea of their kindness and mercy to others has missed the point. So, it also shows that the idea of this kindness is not only for the people receiving that kindness, but for those who are giving the kindness as well. And a lot of research has revealed that the impact on the person giving out that kindness and how it impacts them as well. But what can we learn from these passages? Well, I've got three things. Number one, righteous living isn't about giving attention to ourselves. It is bringing the attention of the goodness of God. We've probably seen different shows and movies, often comedy shows with God in it, and we have a bit of a laugh. Yet, it gives people the wrong idea of who God is and what he's about. And we can see God as perhaps a stern judge. And yet, what is he about? The relationships and kindness, the love. And so this kindness is showing, pointing to what and who God is. That he's not one there to judge. So the righteous living gives a different point of view from God. We're not doing it for God. We're showing who God is, what he is. The second thing, righteous living has more to do with how we love each other than how holy or moral we are. It's not to say God is opposed to fasting, but what's it pointing to? What's it for? It's to build that relationship. God is all about relationships. You've probably seen the movie, Wonder, and the kids went through that with Children's Church a few years ago with the book, and Eric read them the book over several months, and it was interesting what the kids got out of it, and Lily in particular, remember her, I said, so what's the story about, and she would relay it, and she said, it's better to be kind than to be right. And I don't know if you've seen the movie, but just the story, it's about this kid who's significantly deformed, particularly around the face, and he's gone through several surgeries and events, which is not part of the movie so much. But it focuses on his first day of school. He's about to start school. He's been homeschooled up to a certain point, and he's been at home, and now he's off into school. And that first day of school, and you've got this kid that looks different, and the reaction of the other kids and how they interact with him, and also his parents. And you can imagine being a parent and sending off your kid to this school, and you're thinking, am I doing the right thing as they heads off? And integrates into that school for the very first time. And he makes some friends, but there's also others that aren't so friendly to him either, and lots of questions come up. And he realises that, because he's quite a clever kid, he's been well taught, and he realises it's better to be kind than to be right. And it, while simplistic, it sums things up pretty well, doesn't it? So the third thing we've got, real righteous living satisfies others' needs as well as our own. So when we're attentive to opportunities to show kindness to others, we end up nourishing our own health, our relationship with the personal people and with God as well, that we're being part of a community. Sometimes it can be hard for us to balance that need for solitude as well as community, and finding that balance can be very tricky. But in the end, it makes the world a better place. So with the application, though, how does it work with the kindness? Just a few pointers. Again, I've got three. Number one, ask God for help. Sometimes we can be oblivious to what's going on, and even though we're caught up with the world's troubles and things that are going on overseas, what's going on around you? And we can be oblivious to that. So asking God, where's the opportunities I have today to show kindness? What can I do? Particularly when it's least expected, like washing up for a girl's dorm, least expected. But what a difference. Doesn't that encourage everyone? It's made the world a better place, that act of kindness. Number two, and here's one I have a bit of trouble with, build a margin of time into your life. So often we struggle to find that time that we are rushing to church or going somewhere, that we haven't got time to be kind to people, or we've missed that opportunity. It makes me think of a sermon that I heard quite a few years ago, but it looked at the story of Martha and Mary, so in Luke 10, verse 38. And just the story there where Jesus and his disciples were on their way home, and Jesus came to a village where a woman named Martha opened her home to him. She had a sister called Mary, who sat at the Lord's feet listening to what he had said. But Martha was distracted by all the preparations that had to be made. She came to him and asked, "Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to do all the work myself? Tell her to help me." "Martha, Martha," the Lord answered, "you are worried and upset about many things, but few things are needed, or indeed only one. Mary has chosen what is better, and it will be not taken away from her." So Martha's all caught up with what's going on, making preparations, making things really good for her guests, yet has taken her focus away from that relationship with Jesus, with spending that time having a chat. Maybe they didn't need to have that 7-course meal. Maybe just something a little more simple and be able to spend that time together can be what matters most. And the third thing in our application, make sure your kindness helps another retain his or her dignity. Sometimes when we be kind to people, it can be perhaps a bit patronising, or they feel a bit singled out. And it can be difficult in that balance where we want to be able to help them, but at the same time, we don't want them to feel bad either. Now, sometimes giving money or buying something for someone can be appropriate, but just have a think about, how's that going to work? Is it going to be kind to do that for them? Now, I did have a look on the Random Acts of Kindness website, and there's a story there, which I'll finish up with before Dave gets up and then you can get into reading your bulletin there. The story relates to this. It's an adult reflecting back on their school life when they were in primary school, elementary school being in America. And while they're at primary school, they were very poor and didn't have the money for lunch. And it was a little bit embarrassing for this kid. And there was someone there that noticed this and helped them out. So the story goes like this, written verbatim. "When I was in elementary school, we were quite poor. The school offered free lunch. But when the teacher called your name to collect lunch money, you had to call out, 'Free lunch!' I was too embarrassed to call the phrase out, so I would just skip lunch. My bus driver told me he needed help opening the doors and when the kids got on the bus in the mornings, and he asked me if I could help. I also had to walk down the aisle of the bus and make sure everyone was off at school, which meant I was the last one off the bus. Every morning, he'd slip me a quarter before I got off the bus for helping him. Because of his concern, I had lunch every day and the other kids didn't know about it. We became great friends and he became the closest thing to a father I ever had. He took me to church with his family and also paid for me to go on 4-H camp 2 summers in a row, among other things. We moved when I was in 8th grade, and that was the last time I saw him. My children know of him, and so will my grandchildren. I'm still brought to tears when I think about him. Love is the greatest gift."